This is a Sefer here called Sefer Chemda Toiva. It's written by someone named Dovi Halpern. He lives in Lakewood, New Jersey. It's a Sefer on the Yud Gimel Ikrim. And I think it is a very impressive work on the different Ikrim. And if anyone wants to use this...
Is it easy to read?
Very easy to read. Very easy Hebrew, written by an American. Very easy Hebrew. Very well done, I think. We're going to go into... I'm going to do the Perek Hakdama, but the first... goes through all of the Ikrim one by one. There's a top, there's a bottom. There's like the... You know, there's like more... the more thoughts on the bottom, and just the top is the basic ideas, but a lot of very nice work, pieces of work that there is about this. Anyone that would like, I would like to try to get one. This actually belongs to my Rebbe, Rav David Cohen. He lent it to me on loan, and I'd like to get my own. I spoke to the author who said he's going to get me one. I just haven't gotten around to getting it, but I think it's a very good base to use for Yud Gimel Ikrim. We have over here something from another book called Living Emuna. If you, any of you saw this book ever, it's a very nice book, and it has a very important yisoid in Emuna. Yitzi, when are you going to be ready to start? Are you going to be ready to do this month, or you want to start next month with this? Have you been working on it yet?
I've looked at one or two things.
Okay. Well, you don't have to be ready yet. But a very important a component of Emuna is right here. Page 64. Real bitachon. Does anyone have a
page
178? Can I have your marks of this? Page 178. That's it. That's where we are. We're going to read through this page. Real bitachon. What does that mean? Anyone want to read for us? I don't like to. Yossi, take it away.
Sorry,
you
read.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we're just going to bring first Seder.
No, that was Baba. Okay, so I don't usually say, I'm going to tell stories, so I don't usually say Gomes or Tov, I usually like think it. But no. Sometimes.
But
last night I had to I did my sister a favor. I went to pick something up from her apartment for her. And I thought it was close, but ended up being like a long train ride and then like a long walk. I thought, you know, it's fine, I'm going to get the train back, the last train back, and it's going to be okay. So I get run all the way back to the train, and usually the last train's at 12:10, 12:05.
Round.
I get that at 12 o'clock, and the train's already gone. And it's like, I'm at Tachan Amrak, like a bit further even, and I realize I've got like an hour walk back to Yeshiva, because I just brought my Rav card in, and there was no train, there was no bus there. So I was like, oh no, and then I was like, you know, this time I'm going to say Gamzu Ritova, because everyone, it always works. I was like, Gamzu Ritova, and then I started walking, and I turn around and I see a train. I was like, what? So I ran all the way back to the yard, and the train pulls up, and I look up and it says Depa. You know those fake trains?
Depa.
Fake trains. It's actually Depa. I checked with someone.
It's Depa.
Okay, Depa.
What does that mean, fake train?
It's like, well, I don't know.
It's just running.
I looked up and I said Gamzu Ritova again.
Right.
And then I walked for an hour back to Yeshiva. Story.
I thought the guys are like,
yeah, baby.
Wait, so that was an hour walk?
You called me, I would have came in a cab.
Oh,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Get ready for
a
tour.
You should
have called Bro.
Get ready for a tour.
Shit looks like Kobe.
Something about Yitzi's story, which I think is very important. This is as follows. We speak about this, the Gamzu Ritova stories that work out well.
Like
the hotel, right? You did Gamzu Ritova and bang, everything works out well. It doesn't always happen that way. Person needs to have credit in order for things to work out well like that. So you got to be able to do something like Yitzi, which is first you got to be able to say, Hashem, I'm going to do Gamzu Ritova, whether it works out or doesn't work out. I'm going to do Gamzu Ritova, I'm going to stay cool, and if it doesn't work out, it's just fine. If you can do that, then you get credit. And then the next time it works out, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, he really means this Gamzu Ritova. He's not just trying to pull my leg. We're talking about how people like that they want to rely on Hashem and then everything's going to work out well, right? Hashem, I rely on you, so you better make it work out, right? That's not relying on Hashem. Gamzu Ritova is Hashem. If you think it's good, then great. If not, I'm okay with that. So we're getting into real bitachon. That's what we're talking about. Yitzi is telling us a story about real gamzul ha'tayva, not gamzul ha'tayva where like I'm just saying that because I want, you know, I want like miraculously, you know, to get another hotel just like that. So you guys, when you said gamzul ha'tayva, you meant it. Good, whatever, you know, we're just gonna roll with it, right? And then it worked out, the grotto worked out. That is genuine, that's real. Not saying, look, I'm gonna have bitachon in order that some miracle is gonna come, you know, down the pike. So here we are, we're talking real bitachon together with Yossi Hoffman.
Yeah.
We are reading a book called Living Emuna, page 178. Anyone know who wrote the book Living Emuna?
Yes,
I forgot his name.
David.
David. His name?
Who's the guy that wrote it?
David. What? Asher. Right. Or Asher, something like that. That's Asher, David. That's the person who wrote the book. It's a very, very popular book. It's actually, I put out Living Emuna 2. That's what we're reading from.
Yeah.
Chapter 64. Take it away, Yossi Hoffman.
All right. At the end of Parshas Toldos, Bereishis 28:1 FF, we read that Yaakov Avinu was sent to the house of his uncle, Lavan, in order to marry one of his daughters.
Great!
Great, good story so far.
Everything's going well.
Rashi, Ibid 29:11, teaches that as Yaakov was traveling, his nephew Eliphaz came and seized all his belongings. He had been carrying diamonds and jewels loaded up on camels, but they were all taken. He was left with nothing other than the shirt on his back and his walking stick. As the pasuk says, for I crossed this river, Jordan, with just my stick. Yaakov was now going to a man, Lavan, who cared only about money. Nothing else concerned him. He was not interested in having a good son-in-law with a fine character and religious values. The only thing that spoke to him was money.
Lavan was looking for money. He knew that when Eliezer came with 10 camels.
That's right.
With a lot of good stuff. Right? And now he's heard Yaakov's coming. He's excited. Why?
Money. So now Yaakov was arriving at his home, penniless, tasked for his daughter's hand in marriage. He had no engagement ring and no means of supporting himself.
Ugh.
All right, the
Sounds
suspense is building.
The Medrash, Bereishis Rabba,
22, right, tells that Yaakov, recognizing the gravity of the situation, looked up and said, "Esa einai Eloharim, me'ayin yavo Ezri."
How am I going to make a shidduch over here?
I raised my eyes to the mountains. From where will my helpmate come?
Ezer Kenegdoi. I don't care how I'm going to marry anyone. How is she going to want to marry me? Not her, but Lavan. I mean, I got no money.
He said to himself, I don't see any possible way for this to work. But then he said, why should I lose my faith? Ezri meim Hashem, oise shamayim v'aretz.
Ezri is my helpmate.
My helpmate will come from Hashem, maker of heaven and earth. Matches are made in heaven. And no matter how impossible the situation seemed, Yaakov recognized that Hashem, who created the heavens and earth from nothing, can also get him married. As we know, Yaakov ultimately married two of Lavan's daughters.
Not one, he got two. Right? So now, he's going to present now a quandary, a question. Here goes.
From the Medrash's presentation, it appears as though Yaakov at first entertained doubts and had to then remind himself that Hashem is capable of helping. Right? Because first he said, I don't see any possible way for this to work.
Right.
The question naturally arises as to why Yaakov would have harbored any doubts at all. He was the greatest Boteach Hashem, one who trusts in Hashem of all. No one had greater faith than Yaakov Avinu. Why was he on the verge of desperation before pulling himself together and reinforcing his faith?
Obviously, that's just a loose interpretation of the Medrash. That's not what it means. But
right.
It seems like Yaakov is like, oh my goodness, that's hopeless. Oh, you know what? I'm going to, you know, strengthen himself. Says the Shem Mishmuel, the Sachet Shavu Rebbe.
The Sachet Shavu Rebbe says in Vayetze, in the year 5678, explained that in truth, Yaakov never entertained any doubts.
Listen, this is very important.
There are two ways a person can cope with a very difficult situation. One way is to escape via denial, to put the problem out of one's mind and hide under the guise of emuna.
Say that again, those last few words.
One way is to escape via denial, to put the problem out of one's mind and hide under the guise of emuna.
He's hiding.
Right, he's just
such a person says,
Such a person says, everything will be okay, Hashem is helping. But this is not what he is really thinking. He sounds righteous, but in truth he is emotionally escaping by denying that there is a problem.
He just doesn't want to think right. about it, so he says Hashem's going to take care of it. And he's not even going to think about it, but basically he's sweeping it under the rug.
The other response is to be fully aware of the gravity of the situation. Analyze it very carefully and recognize that there does not appear to be any possible way out of the problem. Then the person strengthens himself by recognizing that Hashem can do anything and can save him from any problem, no matter how hopeless it seems. This is the reaction of the true Boteach Hashem. This was Yaakov Avinu's response, as described by the Medrash. Yaakov wasn't about to despair. Rather, he examined the situation and recognized just how serious it was, how there was no natural way for him to be able to marry one of Laban's daughters. Then he said, fortunately, I have Hashem, who is Oseh Shemayim Ba'aretz, who made the universe for nothing,
May Ayin,
and he can help me in any instant. Thank you, Shirley.
He can help me in any instant. So what's going on is as follows. There's two different ways to deal with the situation. Like, whoa, this situation seems to be hopeless. Don't worry. Thank you very much, Yossi Hoffman.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
That was great. Sometimes people say, Hashem is in control, don't worry. They're basically saying, don't think about it. It's not something, it's not on my mind. Yeah, everything's good, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, they're just not really ready to face danger and look it in the eye. They're not ready to do that. So because of that, they just kind of like say, everything's going to be okay. Don't even think about it. They don't think about it. We're following 1 second. Okay? So they just kind of hide behind the guise of Amunah. There is a lot of people that do this or could do this. Just saying, everything's good, everything's going to be fine. But Yaakov is not doing that. Yaakov is looking his problem in the eye, staring it down. He's saying, I understand exactly what's going on over here. I understand what the chances are of this working. Al pi derech hateva. The chances are slim to dismal to zero. It's just not going to work. I can look at that and say, there's no way for this to work. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do the impossible. That's what Yaakov is doing.
So, is it better to like be that first guy, or is it better to be the guy that faces it and says, you know what, there's no way out of this, and then actually not even
bugging out?
Yeah.
That's not going to help you to bug out. Right.
But I'm saying at least you're facing it.
Okay, good. Well, we're going to have to talk about that. Yaakov is going to the highest level of Amunah, which is face it straight and then be having Amunah. So I'm going to give you an example, okay? There's when people deal with the fact that Eretz Yisrael is an element of terror in Eretz Yisrael and a lack of security. Now, there's two different ways of dealing with that. One way of dealing with that is saying, everything's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to take you anywhere, take you here, take you there, and blah, 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 and everything is... And they kind of... Some people that do that, some people, are really just not thinking about the danger. They're not thinking about it. They're just ignoring it. And they're hiding behind the guise of bitachon because they don't want to like bug out. They don't want to like cramp their lifestyle. They don't want to like, you know, be overly precautious. So therefore, they just they say, if Hashem wants to take me anywhere, and I have Amunah, and that's it. They move on. But my question is, those people, this is the litmus test. If they would be in a situation where there is this should be never ever happen again, a terrorist who's like right there. Are they like cool about it? Like, yeah, if Hashem wants to take me, take me. Where all of a sudden they start bugging their brains out. Like, what happened to your faith? What happened to your faith? It wasn't real. That's what happened to it. You were just hiding behind it. You didn't really mean if Hashem wants to take me, take me. You meant to say, I don't want to think about this.
Now you got to think about it.
What?
When it comes to play, when you have to think.
Now
when
you can't not think about it anymore because it's a clear and present danger, all of a sudden it starts bugging out. Yaakov says, I'm going to think about this. I'm going to think about this very clearly. I'm going to go through exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to walk to Laban. I'm going to come in. Laban's going to say, we're the camels. It's like, I don't have any camels. He goes, so we're the goods. I don't have any goods. See, you crazy, man? You think that I'm going to let you marry my daughter? You crazy? Why? Because you're so religious? You think I care about religious? And he went through the whole thing in his mind, and he's like, there's just no way this can work. So if a person wants to really have Amunah and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and says, Hashem can take me, anytime. He puts himself in that situation, in his mind. He puts himself in that situation. he can, in that situation, in his mind, really be above, really stay cool, then he's got real emunah. Story about someone named Rabbi Yosef Herman. We maybe said this story. Maybe we said this story once before. About Rabbi Yosef Herman lived in New York back in the day. There's a book written about him called
All for the Boss.
All for the Boss. And he used to like encourage boys to learn, and used to pay boys to bring them in, and you know, and try to get them. And then he tried to send boys to yeshiva. Now there weren't like really such great yeshivas in America. He sent them to Europe to go to yeshiva and stuff like that. And one time, I don't remember the exact situation. You could read the whole book cover to cover. You tell me what the story is. But a father got upset with him because he was like making his son from. The guy pulled a gun. Pulled a gun on him. It's like a shoot you. So he just went like this. Go ahead, shoot. Shoot me. Go ahead. Now, you try to picture in your mind someone pulling a gun on you. Someone who's angry, pulling a gun. You're gonna totally. I mean, you boys have brought some under high madrega. I can just talk about myself. Totally lose my cool. You know, like totally. You know, but you know, we talk. It's all from Hashem. You could talk from today to tomorrow. But if you're not ready to look it really in the face, in the eye, really look in the eyes, shoot me. Go ahead. You think you could shoot me? You think that Hashem decides when I go and when I come? I know I'm doing the right thing. So if now's my time to go, I'll go. I'm not doing anything wrong. Now's my time to go, I'll go. Shem wants me to go now? Okay. I'm okay with that. That's real, legitimate, real bitachon. That's what Yaakovin was doing, says the Shem Mishmo. A person sometimes, we're talking emunavai, guys. We're talking a lot about it. We're talking about Gamzul Tov and everything like that. But there's a bechina of a person saying that he is that he's not just saying his bitachon, but it's the real thing. And one of the things the Yisrael V'Shar Shaveda says a person has to do. So a person says when a person does v'haftas Hashem Elokecha, when a person says Shema, you say you love Hashem v'haftas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'oidecha. The Gemara says, you know what that means? With your Yetzer Toiv, and your Yetzer Hara. B'chol Nafshecha, says the Gemara. What does that mean? Even if you have to die for Hashem, you're willing to die. Says the Shem Mishmor. Says the Yisrael B'Shor Shavayde. What you're supposed to do in Shema, this is an exercise. This is a complicated exercise. This is not for the light of heart. The person's supposed to think for a second, if I'm in a situation where it's either give my life for Hashem or not, I'm ready to do that. If someone says he's going to throw me right now into a furnace, if I don't bow down to Avodah Zarah, I'm ready to do that. I'm ready to do that. I'm doing it. I'm ready to go. You're supposed to put yourself in a situation. We could all say it, right? It's nice to say it. But if you experience it in your mind, then it's real. That's what Lavan was doing. That's what Yaakov was doing. He was going through it in his mind. What's going to happen when I get there? It doesn't make any sense. I have bitachon HaKadosh Baruch. This is genuine. Let's finish up over here. Last paragraph.
There are times when we confront situations that appear hopeless, whether it's a financial problem, health issue, or any other sort of crisis. A person can either go into denial and make believe he has faith, while deep down he despairs, or say, I have Hashem, and nothing is too hard for him. I am not going to give up. I will continue praying, thinking positively, and relying on Hashem for help.
We say it every day in Shal Shudas, Yesh HaKoyach. Beautiful, Yossi, thank you. We say it every day in Shal Shudas, Gam Ki Eilech Begei Tzal Maves. Gam Ki Eilech Begei Tzal Maves. Even though I am going, Begeit Salmavas. What does Geit Salmavas mean? The valley of death. Gam ki eilech begeit Salmavas. Loi ira ra. I will not fear evil. Ki ata imadi, because you are with me. Hashem is with me, which means that even if I'm mamish, like literally right there. In the valley, I'm there, like, that's right. There's no, it seems to be no way out of this. Surrounded by danger. Lo irara, I will not fear the evil, ki ata imadi, because Hashem is with me. And therefore, a person that has emunah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can do anything, everything. I am now going to bring up the hardest question on emunah that I have ever heard. And it's so hard that I don't really have an answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
This is, I believe, the hardest question of emunah. And I challenge you, you budding Talmidei Chachamim, to find for me a adequate answer, because I have not yet understood well enough, and this is a problem with my emunah. Are you ready?
Yes.
Brace yourselves, folks. Here goes. It's a two-pronged question. Prong number one. Yaakov Avinu said, Esa'eina yelohorim, me'ayin yovoi,
Ezri,
where is my shidduch going to come from? Yaakov says, it's like lost. What?
40 days.
That's not my question. Take it easy. Take it. You ready?
Then what was he complaining about?
He said, didn't know how it's going to happen. Yaakov knows that it was, you know, it's supposed to come from 40 days before, but how's it going to happen? It doesn't make any sense. Ezri, me and Hashem. That's what he says. Hashem is going to make sure this happens. So Rabbi said, where's your shidduch from?
Hashem,
God.
Do you have anything to worry about that you're not going to get your shidduch?
No.
Nothing to worry about. That's what Yaakov said. Nothing to worry about. I have a question. My question is, it's brought in halacha that a person is allowed to get engaged to a girl even on very, very somber days, solemn days. For example, during the 9 days.
Fast.
Even on Tisha B'Av. Why are you allowed to get engaged on Tisha B'Av?
Maybe a loser?
Shema yikadmena acher. That's the lashon. Shema yikadmena acher. It means maybe someone else is going to get her. Yeah, who's that guy?
You could lose your mazel.
Hold on.
That's
already getting an answer. I don't get this. Everything is from Hashem. Hashem, me'ayin yovoi Ezri. Ezri, me and Hashem, I got nothing to worry about. Because Baruch Hu is going to take care of my shidduch. What does Shema yikadmeno acher mean? Another question, prong number two. Then you can go for your answers. Yosef is right now at the mercy of his brothers. And what do his brothers want to do to him as he approaches?
Kill him.
Kill him. But one of the brothers comes up with a plan. The plan is, why kill him? Rather, throw him into the pit. Why is he throwing him into the pit? What?
Save his life.
Save his life. Aye, but there in the pit, there are snakes and scorpions and all those things.
Still has a chance.
If there's people, then you're afraid that maybe a person might somehow intervene in his life and cause him to die before his time. But if we put him into snakes and scorpions, so then he's not in the hands of a bar mazel. I don't get this, guys. I don't get this. No one can touch Yosef if he's not supposed to be touched. So what does that mean? We're worried about the brothers. Maybe the brothers are going to do something. Hashem will take care of him. Yosef's got to be touched. Hashem's going to take care of him.
And Hashem did take care of him. That's
where
he's
from. But why did Reuven feel that it's better to have him in a pit than to have him over there? Reuven, Hashem's going to take care of him. Hashem's going to take care of him.
People have
Bechira, and snakes don't have Bechira. So you're saying is, my Bechira can affect you. Maybe you're supposed to... Okay, but that's very interesting. What you're saying is, what your Moshe Shalita in training is saying is, maybe really, this guy, Yosef, is supposed to live. He's supposed to live. I have Bechira to kill him, and therefore he's going to die. But if I wouldn't be here, then he would live. You're saying that Yosef's life trajectory is going to be altered based on other people? But I thought it's all up to Hashem.
Something's not computing here for me, folks. I'm going to leave this question for you to think about. I want you to think about this. This is not a simple question. Rav Dessler speaks about this at length. And
does Rabbi have any sort of answer?
Rav Dessler speaks about it at length. I have a sort of answer, but I have the answer to me still has not managed to. I have not managed to understand the answer completely. But the question is, just to get the question again, we have two different situations where it seems like someone else can intervene in my life. It is, I have to worry about someone else marrying my wife before me, even though now's not the time to get engaged. Do it anyway. Shema yikad meno acher. What does it mean, shema yikad meno acher? But if it's for me, it's for me. No, someone else is going to intervene. And when it comes to Yosef is in a situation of sakana, the brothers might kill him, better put him into a sakana of snakes than put him into a sakana of people, because snakes don't have bechira. What does his bechira have to do with it? His bechira is going to affect my life? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that whatever is supposed to happen to me, supposed to happen to me. Why does it make a difference if I'm at the mercy of someone who has bechira, or at the mercy of a natural danger? Either way, my life is my life. It seems like my destiny can be altered based on someone else. We will try to figure that out, hopefully, Be'ez Hashem, in the future.
Working.
This. What?